with me, please, to Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Ecclesiastes is a rather fascinating book, as we see Solomon struggling with what really is the purpose in life, and as he expresses his wisdom throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, and obviously draws the conclusion that human wisdom alone simply leads you to vanity of vanities. But as he does express just his observations on life, he comes up with some things that really make you think. And I want to just, a little different study tonight, but just look at these first 10 verses of Ecclesiastes 7. He talks about the word better is used quite often through these verses. You know, this is better than that, this is better than that. And some of the things he says is kind of, when you first read it, kind of a little shocking. Then when you think about it, you begin to realize that maybe he's not so far off after all. The very first thing he says there in chapter 7, verse 1, the first part of verse 1, a good name is better than precious ointment. That's pretty simple to understand. We know that a good name, having a good reputation, is very important in life. And he says it's better than precious ointment. That certainly reminds us of Proverbs 22:1. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. A familiar verse. A good name better than great riches. You know, there's many who in the pursuit of great riches have ruined their good name, have ruined their reputation. And Solomon, in his wisdom, is telling us it's not worth it. A good name is far more valuable than precious ointment, or far more valuable than riches. We understand that. But the next phrase, we might kind of stop and think about a little bit. The day of death is better than the day of one's birth. Kind of like, really? Is that true? Is the day of one's death better than the day of his birth? You know, we normally, we celebrate birth. You know, when somebody has a new baby, man, we think that's great. We celebrate it. We think it's wonderful. But when someone passes away, that's not a celebration. Yet Solomon says, in his observation of life, the day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. Why do you think he would say that? I'm going to try to get some of your feedback as we go down through some of these. Would you agree with that statement? Yes. Why?
Because when you're born, you've got all of the problems of life ahead of you. When you die, you've got heaven.
All right. I think we can all understand that, can't we? You know, the day you're born, you've got life ahead of you, and life isn't always easy. Life can be very difficult, and there's trials, and there's heartaches, and there's struggles, but when you die, that's all over with. We get to go to heaven. And so there is certainly a perspective that we would say, Solomon, you've got it right. The day of one's death is better than the day of birth. Now, again, I'm not suggesting that we flip it around and when somebody's born that we mourn. And when somebody dies, we have a celebration. I'm not suggesting that, but there certainly is a sense in which what Solomon's saying here we can relate to and begin to realize that, you know, life is tough. Life is difficult. Now, certainly there is a sense in which as we surrender to the Lord and we love the Lord, that there is a purpose in life. And there is something to live for, and we're here to the glory of God, and we don't want to not be here until the Lord is ready to take us, because there is a plan and there is a purpose and there is a glory, or that we desire to glorify the Lord. Dave? All right. That's a good point, too. When we're born, we are born sinners, aren't we? But when we die, we are ushered into the presence of the Lord, never to sin again. Lloyd.
The context of this, how's about a good name is better than a good ointment?
later. Exactly. The context speaks to that, and then the next verse. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. Think about that for a minute. If you got two invitations in the mail, and one was you're going to go to a funeral, and the other one was you're going to go to a party, which invitation would you want to take? Solomon says it's better to go to the house of mourning, which is basically a funeral, a wake, than to the house of feasting. Why? Well, again, in the context, as Lloyd was saying here, we're talking about a good name and the death of a good name. We want to go there. There's certainly going to be mourning there, but we can learn some lessons. And then he even goes on and says, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart or will consider it. In other words, when you are faced with death, even the death of a loved one, you know, you go to the house of mourning, you go to a funeral, you're faced with death. And you know, probably all of us when we go to a funeral realize, you know, someday that's going to be me laying in that casket. And that's not a bad thing to think about. Because he says here, that's the end of all men, and the living will consider it in his heart. We need to think about death. We need to think about life after this life. And he's saying it's better to think about these things than to just party all the time and never give it a thought, just to live for the here and now. He says that's not good. Better to go to the house of mourning and to think about life and death and what comes after death. He says that's better than just partying. And again, as you think about the context, that good name, as you go to the house of mourning, you can recognize, what kind of name do I have? Do I have a reputation like the one who has passed away? It's good to think about these things, Solomon's saying, rather than to just never give it a thought and just party your life away. Verse 3. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. That's an interesting thought, isn't it? You know, in Proverbs, didn't the same Solomon say something about laughter is a good medicine? Good for the heart. And yet here he's saying sorrow is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. What do you think he's saying there? Is it true? Is sorrow better than laughter? No one wants to take a stab at that one, huh? Dave? When do you learn the most? Going through a trial or when everything's going smoothly? We're gonna learn and grow as we go through the trials of life, aren't we? Now, none of us want to be in a trial constantly. But I think what Solomon is saying here is that when we go through difficulties and sorrows and trials, that's where we're going to grow. That's where we're going to be drawn closer to the Lord. That's where we're going to seek Him. And when everything's going smoothly, and we're, again, just having one big party all the time, there's no growth there. There's no real self-examination to really seek the Lord. He says, for by the sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. Again, that there's going to be growth as we go through the trials. Glenn? good point. He's making this contrast to make us, you know, kind of get our attention. It seems like when you first read it, it's like, wait a minute, I don't agree with that. And really stop and think about it. In that contrast, you realize maybe he's onto something here. Trials can be and are a good thing. Again, that doesn't mean, and he's not saying here that, you know, we should pray for a 50-year trial that we never get over. He's simply saying sorrow and trials and difficulties can be good for us. In fact, God promises that when we go through those trials, it is for our good. So sorrow is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. Verse 4, the heart of the wise is in the house of mourning. The heart of fools is in the house of mirth. Kind of on this same vein that he's been on here, the heart of the wise is in the house of mourning. Again, I think he's saying that the wise man is going to consider what does come after this life. You know, he's not going to shy away from death. He's not going to shy away from thinking about death. A wise man's going to think about it. A wise man's going to consider what death is all about and what comes after death. A fool, on the other hand, he's just living for the here and now. You know, he's just doing whatever he can to give himself pleasure. That's the hedonistic society in which we live in today. Just the love for pleasure, just the seeking after pleasure. And he says that's a fool. A wise man is not going to be afraid of the house of mourning. A wise man's not going to be afraid of thinking about death and working through that. The fool is the one who all he cares about is pleasure and what gives him pleasure and what gives him happiness. And that's what he's going to pursue. And he's not going to even think about death or those things which don't give him pleasure. Boy. It's not going to be during the party. Verse 5, probably a little easier to understand and comprehend when you first look at it. It's better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. Most of us would rather hear a nice song. Especially a song that tells us how great everything is, than to get rebuked by somebody. And most of us don't like to get rebuked. Most of us don't like somebody to come up to us and tell us what we're doing wrong. And yet, what is better for us? To hear a song in which it tells us everything's wonderful, everything's great, you're great, and, you know, I'm okay, you're okay. Or to get rebuked and be told where we're wrong. Which is really better for us? And Solomon said, we need to be able to take the rebuke. A wise man will take rebuke. In our Iron Sharpens Iron on Saturday mornings with the men, we're looking at what it is to be a disciple and what it is to be a real follower of Christ. And part of that, we can't be afraid of accountability with one another. And accountability means that we have to have friendships that are close enough that somebody can come up to me and say, hey, Don, I don't think you ought to be doing that. Or I think you're wrong in that. Or I think you shouldn't have handled that situation with that kind of anger or whatever the case might be. That accountability, and we should accept that accountability. We should accept that rebuke and not get angry at the person giving it to us. And so Solomon is saying that it's better to hear that rebuke and to accept that rebuke than to have somebody just telling you everything's wonderful or to listen to pretty music. We need to understand the importance of accountability and accepting the reproof and rebuke and correction of others. Verse 6, for as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This is also vanity. What in the world is that talking about? The crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. I believe the thought is we don't do much cooking by fire today. We stick it in the oven. But the idea here is if you get thorns, or the idea perhaps would be twigs, get a lot of twigs and put it under the pot and light it. You know, those twigs burn hot, but they burn fast. If you've ever burned a bunch of twigs, they crackle a lot. But it burns up very fast, and it burns up so fast it doesn't heat the pot. And so that quick fire of twigs crackling and making all the noise is vanity. It's futile because it doesn't do the job. It didn't heat the pot. It burned up too fast. Now, if you get a couple of good logs in there and you light those and they sit there and burn for a long time, they don't make much noise, not like burning twigs, but it heats the pot and it does the job. And so that's the metaphor that he's using here. The crackling of thorns under a pot is vanity. It's futile. It just burns up too fast, doesn't do the job. And he's saying that's what the laughter of fools is. Burning of twigs makes a lot of noise, but accomplishes nothing. And the laughter of fools makes a lot of noise, but what does it accomplish? Again, tying it in with the previous context here, it's talking about laughter and partying isn't really what is going to grow us in our lives. It's going to be the challenges and the difficulties that are going to grow us. And so the laughter of the fool is just a lot of noise. It accomplishes nothing. Verse 7. Surely oppression makes a wise man mad, and a gift destroys the heart. He's really talking about those in authority. The word gift here, and depending on what translation you have, it's the idea of a bribe. And so those who accept a bribe, their heart is destroyed. Their understanding is corrupted by taking the bribe. And the idea of the oppression makes a wise man mad. I really think there it's the idea as you are a wise man and you're a leader of others, and you begin to oppress those who are under you, after a while, you begin to oppress more and more and more. The thought of absolute power corrupts absolutely. The more power you have over people, the next thing you know, you are abusing that power, and you just go mad with that power. And I think that's what he's saying here. Surely oppression makes a wise man mad. As he begins to oppress people, he just goes mad with his control and his power over people. And then as he begins to take bribes, his understanding is corrupted. And we see that elsewhere in the book of Proverbs. Even back in, I think it's Exodus, there's a verse that talks about the accepting of bribes will corrupt the heart. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof. Again, we can pretty much understand that. Once you begin a project, isn't it better to finish the project than to begin the project? Whatever the project might be, it's the end is better than the beginning in the sense that once it's done, it's like there's an accomplishment. And again, I think he's saying that here. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Again, I believe we can easily understand and see that. Sometimes, though, it takes patience to finish. Keeping it in the context here, better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof. We start something, we need patience to see it to the end. And he says, and that patience is better than proud in spirit. Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. Pretty much self-explanatory. We understand that. Verse 10 is a little different. Say not thou, what is the cause that the former days were better than these? For thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this. Isn't that an interesting verse? Think about it for a moment. Why were the former days better than these? Psalmist says, don't ask that question. You're not wise to inquire of that. In other words, you know, it's so easy to think about the good old days. Especially the older you get, isn't it? The good old days. Back when things were better. Back when things were different. And we remember the good old days. We don't have time to fully develop this. Maybe we should keep this verse till next week. But remember the children of Israel? 45 days after leaving Egypt. And they ran into some difficulties. They were hungry and they weren't getting water. And what did they want to do? They wanted to go back to Egypt. The good old days when they were slaves. That makes no sense. First of all, the good old days weren't as good as we think they were. We tend to forget sometimes. That's what happened to Israel. They were forgetting that, you know. Remember the other verse that talks about, they were thinking about Egypt and when they had fish to eat and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. I could never quite understand why they were wanting that stuff. But they were remembering that good stuff back there in Egypt. Forgetting about the slavery and the taskmasters and the hard work and everything else. We tend sometimes to look at the good old days with rose-colored glasses. And Solomon is just reminding us here, don't inquire about the good old days. Now, a lot more we could say here, but let me just throw it out to you just for a moment. Why is it not good to remember the good old days? Why is that not good for us? Any? Very good. If we get so focused on the good old days and we pine for the good old days, we're not dealing with reality. We're not dealing with the present. And if we're pining for the good old days, we're not going to see the opportunities that God's putting right in our faces today. He wants us to deal with reality. He wants us to deal with the present. And isn't it true that contentment has to do with the present? If we're pining for the good old days, then that means we're not content in the present. And we know what Paul says in Philippians chapter 4, in whatever state you're in, to be content. And so if we're focused on the past and kind of remembering the good old days, then we're really not content with the present. And we need to be focused on the present, and we need to be content with the present and recognize that God is giving us opportunities in the present that we didn't have in the past. And this, you know, we can do this in a political sense, you know, and I mentioned this Sunday morning, and I understand, you know, some of us are frustrated, some of us are discouraged. Some of us are fearful because of what we see going on in our country. And I understand that. And we can very easily think back of, man, the good old days when it wasn't quite so bad. You know, back in the days of Ronald Reagan. Good conservatives. But Solomon says, that's in the past. Good old days weren't as good as we might think they were. We're living in the present. We need to deal with the present. We need to seek God's will in the present. We need to see what He has for us in the present, what He wants us to do in the present, the opportunities that are before us in the present. We need to focus there. We can do it in a religious sense or a church sense and think, boy, back in the good old days when people seemed to be more faithful, when people seemed to be more committed, when people seemed to be more dedicated, back in the good old days. Well, if we're pining for the good old days, we're not going to be dealing with the present and looking at the opportunities God has for us today. And so he says, it's not good to be inquiring about the good old days. That doesn't do anybody any good. We need to focus on the now, on the present, and what can we do to glorify God today? Because we can. We get too focused on the past, it's very possible that we start living on past laurels. You know what I mean? We just, you know, boy, back then things were better and I was better, you know, and this and that and the other, you know, and we begin to think, boy, that's back when I was really living for the Lord, and now today it's so hard. And we can't live on past laurels. We deal with the present. What does God want us to do today? Be faithful to him in the present. So Solomon, he kind of throws these things out there in this contrast, very stark contrast, to make us stop and really think. And I believe he accomplishes that very well. Study it on your own. Think it through. Just a little different study tonight as we just kind of run down through those 10 verses. Let's bow in prayer. Father, we're so grateful for your goodness to us in the present. And certainly there were good things in the past, but there were also challenges and difficulties in the past, just as there are today. But you have placed us here, and you have placed us here at this time. Your grace is sufficient for this time. And I pray that we would simply seek your will, to do your will, and to fulfill the responsibilities and to buy up the opportunities that you give to us now. Help us to be faithful to you in bringing honor and glory to your name. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Good evening. Thanks for coming tonight.